Local news, local issues, local talk. This is the KUMA Coffee Hour on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA.
My guest this morning is Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent, Intermountain ESD. And Mark, what bills are still alive in the legislature that you have your eye on, and how do you feel about them?
Last week, I testified for the Oregon Department of Education, their POP, that's a acronym for basically their proposals going out to the legislature for their own budget. So the ODE budget is very important to the ESDs because we hold a lot of their contracts and do a lot of implementation of initiatives through the department. So we're watching that one closely. The regional inclusive services part of the ODE budget is critical for us. That's for the low incidence, high disability students, such as our students that are blind or feeding tube or that require physical therapy or hearing loss. That is a really important contract for us because we implement that in 7 counties across Eastern Oregon. And right now, that's what I was testifying on. That one's underfunded right now. And so we're looking for a pretty significant boost, hopefully, in the legislature on that. So basically funding, we're looking at the funding bills. There is one bill that we are watching closely. It has to do with the abbreviated school day for special education students. These are students that are on individual education plans that are on shortened days that the IEP team has agreed is in best, and mostly kids that are in elementary school, abbreviated days. And the Senate resoundingly came out with approval of a bill that's now moving to the House that eliminates any abbreviated days. The kids need to go full time all day. It's a very complex issue. It's not simple. It's based of the 550,000 kids in Oregon. I believe there are about 650 that are on abbreviated days. So we're not talking very many. And it's usually for the students that require specialized education, and the team makes the decision. I remember as a building principal, there were times that, you know, you'd have a kindergartner or a first grader that they would be successful at this part of the day, but by 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, behaviors and other sorts of things were becoming problematic. And you were always trying to increase there until they, and many times as they matured, you just increased them to a quote normal day. But there have been incidences in Oregon where that has become problematic, where students were denied their full access. I understand what the point of the bill is. During COVID in particular, there were times where districts and ESDs had a hard time staffing for these programs, and that this is what this is a result. But this one has huge ramifications if it's implemented this year. Originally, the change was to occur of the elimination of the abbreviated day in April. Now that it's going to the House, and it looks like the House is going to take a little more time and have several hearings on it, there may be some modifications that it occurs next year. And I hope that is the case, because schools are, it would be something that would require a great deal of planning and hiring in the spring with a couple months left. And let's do this right. Let's do it as a team, as a unit with families, and staff it accordingly. That's the main issue, is staffing for kids, and you know, there's a limited amount of money. So we're watching those types of bills. That's a big one for us, but predominantly it's the funding and the school accountability pieces.
Some school districts are saying the word is public education will be getting $9.9 billion from the state, and that's not enough. How much is needed, and what will be impacted if that amount isn't budgeted by the legislature?
Well, first of all, we were really pleased that Governor Kotek came out with that 9.9. We were kind of expecting a lower number, and we did a lot of work before with her office. She has proven to be highly collaborative with the education community, and came in with that number that we were very pleased. With that said, it needs to go up. What we're lobbying for is $10.3 billion. The reason, Dan, predominantly is we are operating right now on one-time monies. So after COVID, we received a lot of federal money that was one-time monies, and we hired a lot of people, and it's working. We're seeing recovery for kids. We're seeing, I think the demonstration of our graduation rates last year was a very significant achievement for our districts that, you know, have been under a lot of fire. You know, it was rough getting through COVID. It was rough getting through the political climate of COVID, you know, vaccine requirements, mask mandates. That was hard. That was hard on communities. That was hard on board members, superintendents, and teachers. And we're coming out of that. We're coming out of it to, quote, get back to normal type of all-day school, getting back to activities. And that's going to require funding to maintain that. And right now we're operating on one-time dollars that are going away on June 30th. So the 10.3 is the number that we're hoping we can get as close to that as possible.
Any clues from the governor's office about future leadership for the Oregon Department of Education?
Right now, she's reaching out to the various groups, various leadership groups, COSA, which is the Confederated Oregon School Administrative Group, or coalition, I should say, rather than Confederated. We've changed that first acronym there. So COSA, we've been asked to participate with her. She's getting a lot of feedback on that. I know she's looking for a national search on that. But at the same time, you know, if someone in the state emerges, that would be great, too, because it gives them a running start. You know, that is a very, very challenging job, replacing Colt Gill right now. There are a lot of special interests in public education right now. And in Oregon, the state's public superintendent is the governor. And so what she would be appointing is a deputy superintendent that works directly in conjunction with her office. So it's kind of a different governance model than many other states. It's one that, Oregon moved away from voting for a state superintendent of public instruction to an appointed job under the governor. So she has full power to appoint who she wants, but she'll be going through a process and involving the education community, whether that's COSA, OEA, Oregon School Board Association, all the various entities involved with K-12 education will have input as it moves forward into a process.
What are your first impressions of the new leadership at the state capitol?
It's awfully early right now, but I can tell you this, that Governor Kotek has made education a priority. She obviously did, as we said earlier, coming into the budget at 9.9. She has shown a lot of outreach. She hired an ed advisor that had been a former superintendent, and she is so far so good, I guess, is what I would say. Dan, no secret that, you know, Oregon's pretty divided, and I think the governor has a lot of work to really prove that she is for all Oregonians, whether you have an R or a D or a Portland or a Eugene or a Pendleton or a LeGrand behind your name. And what I have seen to this point is she's doing that. She's trying to reach out. Now, this is a legislative session, her first one as well. So she's stuck in the Capitol right now. She's going to be very limited on her outreach. But I can say from the education community, she has been very, very open for suggestions, assistance. I'm really pleased how she responded with the original number. And I think we're off to a good start. It's a brand new governor and a brand new legislature, brand new House Speaker, brand new Senate Chair. Everything is so new that we're all trying to figure this out together. You know, this is my 36th year, and I've been around the block a couple times. But a lot of my relationships with people in Salem, they've retired. They've moved on. So it's a new day, and so far so good would be my impression.
With her priorities for homelessness and semiconductors, does it concern you that education is not number one on the radar?
No. I feel like it has been. And yes, nothing is happening right now until those issues get solved. That's what we've heard in Salem. The semiconductor is really a priority right now, and not much is happening until some of that gets resolved. She obviously is pushing very hard for for funding for homeless. We've got a crisis in Oregon. I don't see those as competing priorities with education. She has said from day one, education is one of her top priorities. And so far, that's been the case with the budget she's put out.
We see some school districts opting to go for a four-day school week. What are the pluses and minuses about a shorter school week?
Yeah, and this is a growing trend, Dan, in our region. We have, I believe, in the 18 districts that Intermountain serves. I think we're like at 14 that are on a four-day week. The advantages. The advantages are communities seem to like it. They seem to kind of develop a culture on what their 4 days are like. Obviously, the 4 days are a longer school day to make up the time. It gives an opportunity then on Fridays for teachers and staff to have professional development, also bring in individual students for tutoring, that sort of thing. It makes for a little more relaxed, I guess, rather than hectic of a five-day week. And it seems to fit some of our rural communities very well. The ones who have gone to it, I don't see them going back. It seems to be part of the culture and how they're operating. The disadvantages of it are time for students. You know, not all kids have opportunities to be in a safe, secure, well-fed situation on Friday. Now, a lot of our schools on four-day weeks, like Umatilla, who's on a 4.5, where they provide breakfast and lunch for that Friday. There's also programs, and even the five-day districts like Pendleton, like Feed the Child, where they actually send food home over the weekends that Altruce and Rotary and other civic groups support. I have a kind of a mixed feeling on the four-day week. I see the benefit of it for staff. It's staff love it. It's a great staff recruiting effort. Families support it and like it. But I also look at our shortened school year. I look at the time in Oregon kids need to be in school, and there's a fifth day that they're not. And so how do you make that up? How do you, you know, I think a 4.5 day week, if you extend your calendar a little bit, and just to ensure that we're maximizing student contact time with teachers. So it's kind of I have feelings kind of on both ends of it. I know that at the ESD, it's difficult to support it because I have schools on 5, I have schools on 4, and with specialists that are trying to get between multiple schools, and you're down, your creativity on scheduling is down quite a bit when you have to pack it into 4 days versus spreading it to 5.
Well, that brings me to my next question. Any movement on lengthening the state's shorter than normal school year?
Talk, but I don't see traction. So, you know, just like we said about semiconductors, you know, the other issues in Oregon going on that we're trying to address in this legislative session, everybody has, you know, there are 4,000 bills initially, and then it comes down to just a few. Everybody has a lot of ideas. This is one of them. Okay. This is one of them that people have talked about. Oregon has, I believe, the third shortest school year. I've said it before that. You know, I push back when we say we have the worst grad rates. That's not accurate. There's a statistical part of that that's just not accurate, that our scores and our kids aren't the same level. No, there's a lot of factors. A lot of our test score problems is Oregon allows students to opt out of the test. You don't have to take those standardized tests. So if you're allowing that to occur, how valid is your data? I mean, you can't have it both ways. And I'm speaking as an educator and defending my people on the front line that you can't beat them up saying grad rates are poor. They're not poor. They're steadily improving, and it's every state has a different way of what diploma requirements are. It's not apples to apples. Then you look at the standardized testing. Yeah, but we need all of our kids to take tests then if we're worried about comparing ourselves to Washington. So these things have a tendency that every state has its own way of doing things, its own culture. But the one thing I really believe Oregon truly is not comparable to its peers is the length of the school year. So I'll keep saying that until I'm probably pushing up daisies. But the bottom line is we need a longer school year. We need more time with kids. Is it being talked about? Yes. Is there traction? Haven't heard a lot. It's very expensive. Very expensive to add more days.
Talking to Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent, Intermountain ESD. Stay with us. We'll be back with more.
Get around town for free. The City of Pendleton Letter Bus Transit is a bus system within the city limits and has 11 stops a day at 30 locations throughout town. Cost of the ride is free, and the bus operates 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. For route and schedule information, please visit our website at www.pendleton.or.us/transportation or call 541-276-6476. Letter Bus Transit is brought to you by the City of Pendleton.
Alaska Air Jet Service has arrived in Walla Walla. The jet is more efficient and quieter than the turboprop, and it flies faster. Plus, enjoy in-flight entertainment and Wi-Fi on board. Fly in comfort with daily service between Walla Walla and Seattle. The midday Walla Walla flight still has good connections at SeaTac and beyond. So purchase your ticket today at alaskaair.com, pack your bags, and enjoy your flight from the Walla Walla Regional Airport. Need more incentive? Free parking. Fly Walla Walla. It works.
Looking for something for all ages? Heritage Station Museum is now open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. With our two indoor galleries, including Umatilla Gold, History of Wheat in Umatilla County, and our large grounds filled with outdoor exhibits, your family can learn all about the history of our county. Step inside the one-room cabin or the Union Pacific caboose, and don't forget to shop the Heritage Station Museum gift shop. Heritage Station Museum, 108 Southwest Fraser, Pendleton.
Let's get back to the area's only live and local morning show, the KUMA Coffee Hour, on News Radio FM 96.5, 1290, KUMA.
Back this morning with my guest, Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent, Intermountain ESD. Anything new to report on the state study of Oregon's high school diploma requirements?
That report that Oregon Department of Ed came up with and distributed, it created a lot of talk toward the end of Kate Brown's governorship, and that's what the intent was, to get the ball rolling on conversation. The one thing that seems to be gaining a lot of traction is adding a personal family finance class. So many people are saying, well, I took that in high school. This isn't anything new. Yeah. This one would be more comprehensive and a requirement. And so there seems to be growing desire for that, and that's fine. I mean, we can certainly integrate that into our schools. But the idea that kids are becoming more responsive and have education on their personal financing, budgeting, all of that seems to be the one class that's moving forward to be required. The other aspects in that report it's all being debated right now, and we'll see where it lands. I don't anticipate a lot of changes to the Oregon diploma in this session. I may be surprised, but I'm not hearing talk like you normally would. I mean, we're approaching April, and so we're more than, you know, the halfway point here. April, May, they're going to be done in mid-June. Some of these things need to start moving pretty quickly. And except for the finance class for students, I'm not hearing other parts of that report that said we need to change our diploma this way and this way getting a lot of traction right now. Maybe it will.
What is the Oregon Trail Regional Educator Network, and what does it do?
Well, you know, as educators, we love acronyms. So we have our own language. So what you just referred to is all called the REN, okay, Regional Education Network. And this is a contract, not with Oregon Department of Ed. It's actually with the Education Advisory Council, which is straight out of the governor's office. It's a different funding pot. But what it is, basically, is funding for a regional teacher training and administrative, all staff, administrators, parapros, and teachers providing professional development in a region. That's a kind of a bland answer, but that's what it is. So what does it mean? Intermountain ESD has a contract. We have that contract, and we work with an advisory council, most of them teachers, and they plan on how they're going to distribute that money for their professional development. So we've seen some really, really cool things coming out of this. Instructional coaching, a principal's academy, widespread behavior, professional development support for behavioral issues, social emotional needs. It gives us an opportunity that when this group of teachers, principals, even community members, they get this pot of money to determine where that goes. And we're seeing some really, really innovative things for all four of our counties participating in that. And so I'm really excited with the REN on where it's at. When it first came out, we went through a lot of storming and norming and a lot of talk, and we weren't delivering, and I was getting impatient. You know, it seemed like we were doing strategic planning after strategic planning. Where's the meat? When we're forming the planet, I want to get some life on it. And it really has taken off this last year. And so I'm really pleased. If you had asked me 3 years ago on the RAN, I was going, I don't know if this is sustainable, if we're getting our return on investment. Now I can tell you that it is really, really exploded and doing well. And I really praise the council that works together, but in particular, Dave Williams, our school improvement director, and McKinnon McDonald, who is the RAN coordinator. Emily Williams, Jordan Monaco, these are the folks in the Wren. They have done an extraordinary job of listening and implementing, and we're seeing some really innovative things. And the Oregon Trail Wren is one of the most successful in Oregon.
IMESD is celebrating reading this month. Tell us what your favorite books were as a child and a young adult.
You know, I think back on those, and I have such fond memories, too, of teaching fifth and sixth grade, because I'd often bring those books in. One of my favorites is Where the Red Fern Grows. I just remember that was really a cool thing for me to kind of disappear at that age, the same age as the characters were, and think about in the woods and that experience of that one time in life when I grew up in Northern California in the Redwoods. And there was a special time when you could be alone in the woods. And that book really resonated with me as one of my all-time favorites. I used to read that for the kids as well. Another one, the Great Brain series. I don't know if it's not really that known, but it was really a fascinating. It was basically about a young kid that was in family that one of the kids was really, really bright. But then it was always into trouble. And then there was a younger brother who would get sucked into that orbit. And the story was told through the younger brother's eyes. It was really a creative set of books. But I just remember sitting down and just loving those back in the day.
What should parents remember that can help them have their students ready to start school again after spring break?
The final push of April and May, I think more than anything, what parents can do to prepare is make sure that there's downtime for your students, because it's crazy with all of the sports and activities, award ceremonies. There's something every single day in April and May, and until we hit that finish line in June. So we always kind of feel like once after spring break, it's like a blur. I tell my staff, we need to get into the schools and support them, but don't do new stuff. Don't try to innovate. Don't try to ask. They're just trying to get through all of these activities to finish the year. And I watch parents and kids get on overload, and they get fatigued. You know, if you're playing Little League and you're getting home at 10 o'clock, you're going to school the next day and you got practice again, kids get tired. We see that in the schools. We see sleep deprivation and physical exhaustion of kids in April and May. So my advice would be keep it moderate. Keep it moderate and make sure that kids have a time to decompress, be a kid on weekends, maybe not have something every single night. If there's one that you can choose, and maybe tonight we just stay home and have dinner and take it down a notch. That's what I would, if you could put that, I think I'm putting on my parent hat too. That's something in April and May you really need to think about.
All right. My guest this morning, Mark Mulvihill, Superintendent, Intermountain ESD. Mark, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Dan.
That's going to do it for this edition of the KUMA Coffee Hour. Have a terrific Tuesday. We'll be back again tomorrow. Download our podcast at mycolumbiabasin.com.
Depend on us for local news, sports, and weather. News Radio, FM 96.5, 1290 KUMA, Pendleton.